So Sutta 16, Chetokila Suttas, the wilderness in the heart. Thus have I heard, on one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's Park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Bhikkhus, Venerable Sir," they replied. The Blessed One said this, "Bhikkhus, that any bhikkhu who has not abandoned five wilderness in the heart and not severed five shakers in the heart should come to growth, increase, and fulfillment in this Dhamma and discipline. That is impossible. What, bhikkhus, are the five wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned? Here, a bhikkhu is doubtful, uncertain, undecided, and unconfident about the teacher, and thus his mind does not incline to ardor, devotion, perseverance, and striving. As his mind does not incline to ardor, devotion, perseverance, and striving, that is the first wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned." So that means he said that the first one is to have, do not have the faith, confidence in the Buddha. There's the teacher, there's the Buddha. So there has no faith, because it's important that we have the faith, because but have to come from the right understanding. For example, like someone have doubt whether on maybe, you know, the Buddha is a special being, and it's impossible, because nowadays a lot of people saying that it's impossible to get enlightened. So then it'd be better, you know, just to practice, you know, is to reborn in a better place or in heavenly realm. I heard some people say that, you know, even some Buddhists, they said that. So they find that it's impossible to become enlightened. So they have doubt whether this maybe is beyond me, only maybe whether Buddha is exists, and they have doubt, and whether that is a Buddha is not just ordinary being, and you know, that could be able to get enlightened. So when you have doubt, you will not arouse that, you will not inspire, and you will not arouse that the energy to practice, isn't it? Because you have doubt. Like for example, something that that you don't, you have no faith. So yes. This is more. This is the have the confidence and the faith in the Buddha. So that is like, because like we have no faith, but this faith is come from, is have the right understanding. For example, some people might have lots of faith in the Buddha, and then they think that the Buddha, you know, oh, that they pray to Buddha, may the Buddha, you know, they get something out of the Buddha, they pray very hard, and they believe in the Buddha, they have a very strong faith. But that is not come from the right understanding, that is from the wrong view. You know, maybe some people think that, you know, they have the faith in the Buddha, so maybe their life, everything that will go on well for them. And then there's something that's, you know, maybe there's they have something difficulties in their life. Then they say, okay, you see, it's not working. I have faith in the Buddha. I pray so hard, and still there is some misfortune, you know, happened to me. So that they have, this is not come from the right understanding, and also will not the mind will not incline other. That means that you have the inspiration. That you then you give rise to the determination. That is the energy. That is this kind of energy is the noble energy. It's not the kind of energy that like you want to do something, you want to get something. That not the kind of energy. So later the Buddha will explain that in terms of the Idipada, how this is a noble power. So. For example, like someone they don't really, they have this wrong view of the Buddha, of the Buddha, so they take Buddha as a god. So they have very strong faith in the Buddha, but that is not from the right view, not the, from the right understanding. That is wrong view. So this, then the second, then if you don't have the faith and you have doubt and you are not confident that we be able to practice, put into practice, then you will not strive. We will not persevere, isn't it? We will not do that because, you know, I am not really sure that, but I'm, you know, that's where the Buddha, he himself got enlightened, you know. So then you will not arouse that, you know, that energy to do the practice, to put forth effort into practice. So that's it. That is what it means, that you have no faith. So because like sometimes because of you arouse faith, then you put forth effort. So but sometimes it's not necessary that you have to start with the Buddha. You have faith in the Buddha, and then you have the faith in the Dharma. So sometimes can be the other way around. So now the second one, the Buddha said, that is again. A bhikkhu is doubtful, uncertain, undecided, and unconfident about the Dhamma, as his mind does not incline to other perseverance, striving, devotion. That is the second wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned. That is that you have doubt the about the Dhamma, that's the Buddha's teaching, the truth. Like the Buddha's teaching is all, the Dhamma is all, always referred to the teach, the law of karma. So if someone have doubt, you know, that, oh, I don't believe that is, you know, that is rebirth, that is this law of karma, and whatever we do have no consequence. So you will not really strive, you know, to really put for effort, you know, to really live a skillful life. So you will not have that inspiration. For example, like someone come across to the Buddha's teaching and they say, oh yeah, it's very inspiring. Who said that? And they say, oh yeah, it's the Buddha. Because of they have the faith in the Dhamma, the teaching, then they have the faith in the Buddha. So it can be the other way around. Because you listen to the Dhamma and you feel so inspired. So like all of you come here, oh, you listen to the suttas and you feel inspired, and then you go back, you put for effort, you know, to do the practice. This is the second wilderness in the heart. Because what it means, the wilderness in the heart, that is, it means that is a barrier, like a stump. You know, some they translate as a stump. Chetokila is a stump, or more like a barrier, like it's stop you from grow, have any growth, you know, stop you from growing further, because of if you have this in your heart, then it will stop you from going further. So when you don't have the faith, not confidence in the Buddha, and not confidence, have no faith in the Dhamma, so we'll stop you, because you will not put forth effort. You will not strive. You will not put forth effort. You will not persevere to keep going, because you have doubt. So if you have that is really a stumbling block. It's really a barrier. Stop us from going further. So that is the second wilderness in the heart the Buddha mentioned. So again, a bhikkhu is doubtful, uncertain, undecided, and unconfident about the Sangha, as his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. That is the third wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned. So, for example, like some people that come across to a monks or nuns, that they find them are very inspiring. And the way they conduct themselves, and they're full of loving kindness, and they feel that, you know, that when they be with this person, that they become very peaceful and very calm, and they feel very inspiring. Then they will start to put forth and say, oh, I would like to, like, you know, because they have someone that in front, right in front of him, that in front of the person, that, you know, they have this very peaceful and calm. And actually, bhikkhu body is one of the very good example when he was about 10, the first monk that he's met, that is a Vietnamese monk, and the first time he met, he was very young, and he was really struck by the tranquility of this monk, very peaceful and very calm, the serenity, and he was really give him a very strong impact on his mind. That he said, "Oh wow, I haven't seen a being like that before, a man so calm and so peaceful, and really have that strong impact in his mind." And as all of you know, even this Majjhima Nikaya, Bhikkhu Nyanamoli and Bhikkhu Bodhis translate this sutta. So actually, he's the one who see a monk that, you know, on the street. He didn't even know this monk. He's just, you know, walking on the street. And he was so inspired by how this monk so peaceful and so calm. And he was inspired. And then later he become a monk. So then sometimes that, you know, the Sangha, that means that those who listen to the Buddha's teaching, then they put into practice, there to get enlightened. So then this the Sangha. So if you have the faith, you have the confidence in the Sangha, then you have the confidence in the teaching, and then you have the confidence in the Buddha, the teacher. So they say sometimes it's not necessary that you have to come from the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. You can come from, you have met some monk or nuns in your life that really inspire you, and then you start to get to practice. Then you can go from the Sangha to the Dharma and the Buddha. So maybe from the Dharma to the Sangha or to the Buddha. So it's not necessary that you have to go according to the sequence, you know, from the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So again, a bhikkhu is doubtful, uncertain, undecided, and unconfident about the training, as his mind does not incline to other. Perseverance, devotion, and striving, that is the fourth wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned. That is, the training actually is not only the training rules. Like for example, like here when the Buddha speak to the monks, it's not only referred to the training rules, not only referred to the Patimokkha's, you know, the Vinaya rules, it's not referred to that. It's only part of that. That is the sila, only part of that. So actually, it's referred to the whole path of practice. That is the Noble Eightfold Path. That is, you have to have the sila, samadhi, and panya. That is morality. So morality is a foundation for a peaceful mind, the cultivation of the mind. So the samadhi actually is not only, a lot of people think that it's only only sitting in meditation. That is the cultivation of the mind. So that is the cultivation of the minds. You have the samadhi groups have three. So you got to have the mindfulness, stillness, calmness, and effort. The effort actually is always referred to the four right effort. Because if with mindfulness itself, it's not enough. You're just knowing, you know, just mindful, you know. So for example, you have the unwholesome thoughts arises. So you have this anger. So it's unwholesome state of mind. And you're aware of that. But because of you haven't cultivated the calmness, the stillness, you not be able to hold yourself. And then each time you think that I should have hold myself, I should have not to do that. Again, we do that again because you don't have the stillness, the calmness to hold the mind. So actually it's not easy to have unreactive awareness. So you need to have the calmness, the stillness, the consent. There's some that translate as concentration. You be able to hold the mind and not to react. And also you have to put for effort. That is the four right effort to stop the mind, to have a break. You know, to stop the mind from going further. So to stop the mind, to avoid this unwholesome state of mind, like anger or greediness, you know, you stop that, avoid that. But if it's already arisen, then to abandon this unwholesome state of mind, to abandon this, for example, ill will or anger, then you replace by a thought of loving kindness, so a wholesome thought. Then you maintain, you know, replace that, you maintain that. So when you maintain that, so then this unwholesome state of mind will not arise. This is this for right effort. So if these three together, you know, is this mindfulness, stillness, and effort, right effort. If these three, they're intertwined together, they become very powerful and solid. If you have only mindfulness, it's snapped very easily because it's not strong, it's not powerful enough, because it's not solid. But only with concentration, some people try very hard concentration, and that without mindfulness, and they just focus. I remember someone told me that when we were in the monastery, and someone stay in the monastery, and some of the food goes off, and this person said, "Oh, I didn't know that the food is already off, because I just focus on chewing." So I mean, it's not very good, you know. You just focus, you know, just the focus, you know, itself. So not knowing, don't not even aware that what is that, but it's not wrong that we know the taste, whether it's sour or sweet, you know, that knowing, you're mindful of what we are eating, isn't it? Not only the chewing itself, focus, you know. They say sometimes it's become blur. It's not no awareness, not bright the mind, you know. It's just chewing, and then the food rotten. They don't even know, they just swallow it. And that is no. Then this is the only the awareness, and also you have to have the, you know, that there is unwholesome state of mind arises. You know that, you know, you if you react to that emotion, it's going to lead us to suffering. You know, we causes harm to others and to ourselves. We know the danger of that. You're aware of that, and then you'll be able to put for effort, and also you have the awareness, and also you have the stillness, the calmness to be able to hold yourself. Your mind is strong enough to hold. Of course, sometimes easy said and done, and don't do this, don't do that to avoid that. But sometimes again and again, a lot of people find themselves that they shouldn't have done that, but they still couldn't hold, couldn't bite back their tongue and not to say something. So you do need that, you know. It's this tree is important. This the cultivation of the mind is not only mindfulness, it's not only stillness, and it's effort. These three have to come together. Of course, this have to be supported by the sila, morality. So the morality is important. That is a foundation for a peaceful mind. Because if you are not, so because you have done something that, you know, that is causes, I mean, harm to others, and also is to ourselves too, isn't it? If you have done something, you know, that is not, you feel that is not quite right, and your mind go back, you go on and on and on. It's very difficult to be peaceful. It's just natural. It's just like the Buddha said, it's natural. You know, there is a, you live a virtuous life, you expect that you lead to gladness when your mind, when you are a virtuous person. It's natural that you have the gladness. You feel, when you do something good, you feel good about yourself. That is natural. The Buddha said, whether you want it or not, it's happened by itself. It's natural. It naturally leads you to that direction. So when you have the gladness, then you have this joy, you have the energy. So when you have the joy, you have the energy, then you have this happiness. So that's why it's always happiness come first before the stillness. So you have the joy, then the tranquility, then you have the happiness, then your mind still. Because why? When you're happy, then then you're content. You don't want to go anywhere. You're just happy to be there. You're just happy to in this moment. Why some people run away from this moment? Because they're not happy. Usually people that they're restless because they're unhappy. When someone is unhappy, they're restless. The mind always wander off. So they say it's important, the happiness, if you want to cultivate a peaceful mind, to develop the wisdom, happiness actually is the prerequisite. They say the Buddhist, this path, the path actually is a happy path. You need to have the happiness first, to come first. Then only you'll be able to focus. Only through the still mind, the peaceful, the still mind where the insight arises from, when the five entrances abandon, then you have the clarity of mind, then you can see things as they really are. You see one thing leading to another, and it's happened by itself. I mean, it's not through willpower, it's not through try to control and make it. You can't make it happen, it's happened by itself. So the morality, so it's a foundation for a peaceful mind. So a peaceful mind is the foundation for development of this wisdom. So the whole training, the whole path, the training actually is referred to the Noble Eightfold Path. That is the Sila Samadhi Panya, this whole path of practice. So if you have no confidence, have no faith in this training, the Noble Eightfold Path, you will not strive, isn't it? You will not persevere. You will not arouse the energy to do the practice. You won't. That's why this is the fourth wilderness in the heart. So if we have this wilderness in the heart, that is a barrier that stops us from going further to have growth in the Dharma. So then the Buddha go down to the fifth wilderness in the heart. He said, again, a bhikkhu is angry and displeased with his companions in the holy life, resentful, callous towards them. And thus, his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. As his mind does not incline to other devotions, perseverance, and striving, that is the fifth wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned. So if someone constantly have a lot of ill will, anger towards the companion in the holy life. It's just like, for example, if in the family you have a lot of anger you towards your partners, you know, or maybe in your place, you know, with your colleague, you know, constantly you have lots of ill will, then actually you will not have aroused that inspiration because your mind is disturbed and you're obsessed with that, you know. Each time you come back, because normally when you have a lot of anger, then you give rise to, very easily you get depressed. So when you're depressed, the energy is really low. Just imagine you constantly, your mind is just obsessed with that. You think you will have energy to practice, to arouse the energy? No, you can't, because the mind is just constantly, you go back, you're thinking about at home, this person said that person said that, and that is really a stumbling block. This is really stop us from going further. Because you always think that the problem is outside. Actually, it's not. So the anger is arise within our own mind. So sometimes we thought that it's the person made me angry. The person is the one who they are the one. They make me angry because of them. My suffering is come from the other person. It's just like yesterday I mentioned about one of the lady. Just recently she told me that when she was really stressed out, she planned. She said she really had the planning to kill her boss. She do all the planning. She said she was, because sometimes that moment she was thinking that her suffering is come from the boss. The boss gave us too much work, and she said she worked till midnight, and the next morning, as she still take work back home to work till 3 a.m. and she go back to work again, and to a point that she's completely stressed out. She said that she becomes depressed. She was really depressed, a lot of anger. She depressed. She planned to kill her, and then she planned that after killing her boss, she's going to jump down from the, because she was working in Singapore, have a lot of these high-rise buildings. So she planned that, you know, she jumped down from the building. She said, this is what she planned. And when she told her sister said, you're crazy. You just changed your job. Why you want to kill your boss? But that moment, you don't, because we get stuck, you know, that moment, because our mind, once we think that object is a problem, so we get stuck in. All we think is that how bad is the person is. And then again and again, we get, you know, we lost. Sometimes it's just amazing. Some people commit suicide because of small thing, because you focus on that, it's manifest, and then you become unbearable. You think that is your problem. So your mind is there. Because of anger, so then you not be able to live harmoniously with your companion in the holy life or your partners, because you have lots of anger. Then you're not at ease and at peace, and that is really draining. You have no energy. You cannot strive. You have no energy to practice because it's really draining, especially with this unwholesome state of mind. You know, again, your mind, you go in there. So that's why if the problem is, if we can see that it's come from ourselves. So when we have that, so we ask ourselves, do I have a thought of loving kindness towards that person? So if we can't, so at least we can wish ourselves that at least I have no ill will towards that person. Then at least you know, we take away, have a break, you know, from really go on and on. Because once we go in, like we suck in, and then we just get lost. So when you have that, you can't arouse the energy at all, no energy. So that's why sometimes we on and it's disturb the mind. So there is the anger. So actually in the other suttas, the Buddha did mention about how to deal with this unwholesome state of mind, especially the anger in this which sutta, actually the Buddha did mention that in one of the suttas, the Buddha did mention that there is a five steps, you know, to stop the mind. I think there is a Vitakka Santana Sutta, the removal of distracting thoughts. That's the Buddha did mention how we when we have these unwholesome thoughts. For example, you have this anger, ill will towards someone, so you feel like I'm going to strangle him. You know, it's really angry. So the Buddha said that, you know, then you have to replace the thought of loving kindness. You know, try to, you know. So after doing that, the Buddha said that is the first step. And then it doesn't work. And you still want to strangle that person. Then you come to the second step. Then you reflect on the danger of that. You know, the danger of if you going, you know, if you react and then you go on, you know, to have this anger, then you do something that will hurt yourself and hurt others, isn't it? So you reflect on the danger of that. Then after doing that, you still very angry. You still want to strangle that person. So the Buddha said you go to the third step. That is, you try to remove yourself, like not to pay attention on that. Or if you can physically remove yourself, then it's good. Walk away, that is the best way. But if you can't, then you try to not to pay attention to that. Maybe pay attention to other things, or not to focus on that. So the Buddha said, so that is the third step. So he said, after doing that, you still want to strangle that person. So you have to come to the fourth step already. The fourth one, they said you pacify the thought that is you maybe you use something like you keep telling yourself like calm down, because when you put your attention to the noting, you know, to the words like calm, so then your attention is not on the person, isn't it? Then on the words like calm, make peace. So then it's a break. Then you will not go further. They help you to go, you know. Then after that after the fourth step, you still want to strangle that person. So there is no more. The fifth one is the last step, the Buddha said. So you really have to clench your teeth, that you have to suppress yourself not to do that. Because you're going to strangle someone. So, but this one, you do it with awareness. It's not that you're not knowing. That you're going, if you go further, you will do something that causes a lot of harm to yourself and to others. Because you're going to harm someone, then you have to suppress. But of course, you after doing the fourth step, that is the last one. But if you always do that, you know, when anger come up, you just suppress, then it's no good. Then you become a mental habitual pattern that you're suppressing all the time. So when you suppress all the time, it will explode. Then that is not the... Usually if you follow instruction, by the time you go to fourth step, anyhow, your anger will subside quite a bit, you know. After you try the first step, not working, you try the second one, the third, the fourth, and then, you know, come to the fourth, I mean, pretty much, you know, your anger will, you know, subside quite a bit. So that is in the other suttas the Buddha did mention, but I just gave you the gist of that, the suttas, and you can read the suttas about that, you know. They say it's important if you have a lot of anger, then really stop us from striving, you know. Stop us to arouse the energy, because it's raining, you have no energy. So that is the fifth wilderness in the heart, the Buddha said, that is stop us from have the growth in the Dhamma to fulfillment. So then the Buddha said, these are the five wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned. So now the Buddha went on to say, what, bhikkhus, are the five shackles in the heart that he has not severed? Here, a bhikkhu is not free from lust, desire, affections, thirst, fever, craving for sensual pleasure, and thus his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance and striving. As his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance and striving, that is the first shackles in the heart that he has not severed. So that is we craving, we attach to the sensory pleasure. So that is the senses, we attach to that. So then the shackles, that means that we bind by that, we've been bound by that. So then we cannot escape. That is the one who tie us down, the sensory pleasure. So like for example, it's just constantly that, you know, if our mind like constantly thinking about, you know, getting a good food, you know, then your energy is all going to there. Actually, this energy is going out. It's this kind of energy, the Buddha said, this kind. Of course, you know, you have the kind of, the Buddha never denied the happiness from the senses. You do have happiness, but the kind of happiness is not the wholesome happiness. This is unwholesome happiness. This kind of happiness leads us to more suffering, will not lead us to peace. Only the happiness within, the Buddha always encourages us to pursue the happiness within ourselves. Only that happiness within ourselves, it leads to peace and calm. Because this kind of happiness is going out, will not lead us to peace, to calm. For example, like you listen to a Dhamma and you feel you're inspired, and you have a lot of you have lots of joy, you know, after listening to the teaching. Then because this is not rely on the senses, because it's within yourself. So it's not dependent on the senses, but it's independent. So within yourself. So normally with the inspiration, so with the joy that leads you to, you have the energy, and then again the joy is one of the factor of enlightenment that lead you to peace and happiness and peace, and then development of the wisdom once again. And this is how that is, if we persuade that kind of happiness from the senses, then that is, we bound by that, then we will not have growth in the Dharma. We will not have a fulfillment. We will not have progress in our practice. So this is the first shackles that the Buddha's mentioned. Then again, a pickles is not free from lust, desire, affection, thirst, fever, and craving for the body, as his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. That is the second shackles in the heart that he has not severed. Then that is like we attach to the body. So we think that, you know, we attach to this body. We think that, you know, we have this for example, myself when I was young, when I was in my 20s, so I was very attached to my appearance, you know. So I like to go to beauty salon. I spend hours there, and I even tattoo my eyebrow. So I was thinking, I don't have to do it every day, you know. You save the problem. Then this is the attachment to the body, and then you use lots of energy by thinking that, you know, spend a lot of time, you know, doing that. So if you spend time there, you will not arouse that energy, you know, to striving, you know, to practice, isn't it? You will not persevere. It's not, you don't have the inspiration, you know. Because it's just a craving, because we attach to this body so much, attach to our appearance. We want people to praise us, oh, you look nice, you know. We attach to that because they give us a sense of self, who we are. So we attach to ourself, you know, to our own body, the Buddha said, you know. Then this is also, we're bound by that. So if we have that, if you do not, the Buddha said, you have not severed this one, the attachment to the body, then we bound by that, then we will not have growth in the Dharma, we will not have progress. So in the Dharma, then the Buddha continued to say, a bhikkhu is not free from lust, desire, affection, thirst, fever, and craving for form, as his mind does not incline to utter perseverance, devotions, and striving. That is a third shackles in the heart that he has not severed. And this is that it's more like attachment to the form. The form actually is also referred to attachment to the other people or the things that we want. Like we craving for a new car, we craving for things, we craving for material things. So we strive to get that. So that is not the right striving. That is this is the wrong effort. So we sometimes we strive very hard to get what we want. We strive to get the material thing. We strive to have all those enjoyment, you know, I have an indulge in the sensory pleasure. So this not this type of striving. It's not to strive to get things. So actually the striving is to stop. So it's very difficult to stop, isn't it? So we strive to stop and not strive to get things. So that is we crave for things, you know, material things. That is the third shackles that the Buddha's mentioned in the heart. Then that he has not severed. So this is the third shackles. So then again, a bhikkhu eat as much as he like until his belly is full and indulges in the pleasures of sleeping, lolling, and drowsing, and his mind does not incline to other perseverance, devotions, and striving. That is the fourth shackles in the heart that he has not severed. That is that, like sometimes people they like the pleasure of like drowsiness, like you just drowsy, you know, because this is one of the way that some people use it as a way to, because it's unskillful to face the pain in their life, the emotion, the negative emotion. So they try to run away by using this. So sometimes some people when they are depressed, you sleep a lot. And this is one of the way to escape, you know, running away from looking at dealing with our pain, our problem. I remember when I was in Thailand, so the place that we stay actually is the women section. Actually, is the Kutis there. Actually, is old cemetery that we stay. And one of the lady there, she told me that how she have lots of fear. She was really terrified. Initially, she was quite okay until one day that because we have someone pass away, the cremate in the monastery, and for Thai custom, they have the ceremony of washing the hand, you know, before the cremate. So she's look at the dead body, the face, you know, that moment he look and he do that, and then the next day with the cremation, and after a few days the family come and collect the ashes and put into the wall, and actually the wall is just the wall of the area that we stay, and then her kutis is quite close to the wall. After that she couldn't sleep, she was really terrified, she's lots of fear. And so one of the ways she helped herself to deal with her fear, you know what she did? She shut herself off. She went to bed at 7, she wake up at 7. Her mind totally shut off. She said, this is how, because she said she can't deal with that. So this is how sometimes we like to sleep, you know, so that we know we don't have to look at the pain. And that's why sometimes we will have take alcohol or drugs, because of it's too painful, they can't deal with that. So it's unskillful. So they use it as a way to run away from the pain, you know, the problem they have to face, because it's painful. It's not easy, you know. Then they use this as a way, you know, and to escape. So that's why it's enjoying sleeping, you know, and enjoy with the drowsiness. Because when you're drowsy, you're not awake, so you will not think of that your problem anymore. So this is one of the way. So if you always do that, we're bound by that. So we will not have growth in the Dharma. We will not progress in our practice. So the Buddha says this is the fourth, and this is the fourth checkers in the heart that he has not severed. So again, a bhikkhu lives a holy life, aspiring to some order of gods. Thus, by the virtue of observance or asceticism or holy life, I shall become a great god or some lesser god. Or thus, his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. As his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance, and striving, this is the fifth shackles in the heart that he has not severed. So these are the five shackles in the heart that he has not severed, the Buddha said. So the fifth one is that sometimes people pray, you know, to the God, and they thought that they do some all this practice, then they want to reborn into the heavenly realm. They don't want to be, you know, that they have no interest. So you still want to be exist. They're still craving to be exist, you know, in a heavenly realm. So then if you have that, you're still bound by that. I know one of my friends many years ago, my Dharma friends, she said to me that she don't want to attain Nirvana. She said she want to be a god. She wants to reborn in heavenly realm. She said that's why her main purpose of offering lots of dhanas, doing all the Dharma work, for her intention is to reborn in heaven. She told me, she said, you know, I only want to reborn in heaven. So this is her intention. So she bound by that, you know. She just wants to reborn she still wants to come back. No, she doesn't want to. She still want to exist. So when we want to be, then we come back again and again. So we're bound by that. So no escape. So then we will not have any progress. And in the practice, it's impossible that, you know, we have fulfillment in the Dhamma and the discipline. So these are the five shackles in the heart that he has not severed. So because the any because, so basically is explained all the suttas now, it's just a repeat. So I just read the repeat. Because the any bhikkhu who has abandoned five wilderness in the heart and severed five shackles in the heart should come to growth, increase, and fulfillment in this Dhamma and discipline that is possible. What bhikkhus are the five wilderness in the heart that he has abandoned? Here a bhikkhu, he is not doubtful, uncertain, undecided, or unconfident about the teacher, and thus his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving, as his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving, and the first wilderness in the heart has been abandoned by him. And then again, because he's not doubtful, uncertain, undecided, or unconfident about the Dhamma, as his mind inclines to others, perseverance, striving, devotion, the second wilderness in the heart has been abandoned by him. Again, a bhikkhu is not doubtful, uncertain, undecided, or unconfident about the Sangha, as his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, striving. The third wilderness in the heart has been abandoned by him. Again, a bhikkhu is not doubtful, uncertain, undecided, or unconfident about the training, and his mind inclines to other perseverance, devotion, striving. This fourth wilderness in the heart has been abandoned by him. Again, a bhikkhu is not angry and displeased with his companions in the holy life, nor resentful and callous towards them, and thus his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving, as his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. This fifth wilderness in the heart has been abandoned by him. So these are the five wilderness in the heart that he has abandoned. So what, because are the five shackles in the heart that he has severed? Here, a bhikkhu is free from lust, desire, affection, thirst, fever, and craving for sensual pleasure, and thus his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. As his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving, this first shackles in the heart has been severed by him. Again, a bhikkhu is free from lust, desire, affection, thirst, fever, and craving for the body, as his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, striving. This second shackle in the heart has been severed by him. Again, a bhikkhu is free from lust, desires, affection, thirst, fever, and craving for form, as his mind inclines to other perseverance, devotions, striving. This third shackle in the heart has been severed by him. Again, a bhikkhu does not eat as much as he likes until his belly is full, and does not indulge in the pleasure of sleeping, lolling, and drowsing, as his mind inclines to other perseverance, devotion, striving. This fourth shackle in the heart has been severed by him. Again, a bhikkhu does not live the holy life aspiring to some order of God's task by this virtue of observance or asceticism or holy life, I shall become great God or some lesser God, and thus his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving, as his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. This fifth shackle in the heart has been severed by him. These are the five shackles in the heart that he has severed. So because the any bhikkhu who has abandoned these five wilderness in the heart and severed these 5 shakers in the heart should come to growth, increase, and fulfillment in this Dhamma and discipline that is possible. So he developed the basis of spiritual power and consisting in concentration due to zeal and determined striving. He develops the basis of spiritual power consisting of in concentration due to energy and determined striving. He developed the basis of spiritual power and consisting in concentration due to purity of mind and determined striving. He develops the basis of spiritual power consists in concentration due to investigation and determined striving. And enthusiasm is the fifth. So that is the Buddha said about this, the Idipada, that is the four roads to success, the four roads to power. So that is the Jnana Tiloka explanations of this Idipada. That is Idi, that means it's power, a magical power. And sometimes they translate as this heroic power, heroic, you know, to arouse that, because for example we inspire and we arouse that energy. So that is the Idipada roots to power consists of four qualities. These four qualities that indicate the root to power connected therewith, and because they form by way of preparations the root to the power constituting the fruits of the path, namely concentration of intention. Then you have this intention accompanied by effort of will. That's why sometimes when we start, we have to have a little bit of will, good will, you know, accompanied by the effort of will. You know, we have this determination. So we have this will to do the practice. That is that it means by chanda samadhi. That's called chanda samadhi, that you consent to this. You know, like for us, for example, like for the bhikkhu and bhikkhunis, like we not be able to attend the, for example, we have the sangha karma, so we will send our consent. Okay, please, you know, my consent of whatever you discuss, so I give my chanda. They also translate as a concentration of intention accompanied by effort of will. So concentration of energy, the virya samadhi. So the samadhi based on that energy, that is the virya, that's a kind of heroic energy. So the concentrations of based on the is a chitta samadhi, that is concentration of consciousness, and the concentration of investigation accompanied by effort or will. So this is the Idipada. So when you got to have the desire, like the someone went to Ananda, asked, you know, that you got to have the desires to do the practice. So you got to have the desires to abandon the desires that leads us to rebirth. So that is these desires. So it's not all desires is no good. So a lot of people think that Arahant is like a vegetable, you know. They have no feelings, no desires. So if you have no desires, we will not eat, we will starve to death. So if you have no desires, we can't go to the toilet. So it's not all desires that have the results, you know. That's just desires to do the practice. So when they have the desires, then you start to arouse the energy. For example, you have the desires to come here to listen to come here for this sutta class. So you got these desires, isn't it, to do the to listen to the Dhamma? Then you arouse the energy. So this is a noble energy, noble power. Is that it's related to the fruits, related to the path? It's related to the freedom. That is a wholesome energy. It's not those kind of energy that we arouse, you know, to get something, you know, to try to hurt someone. That kind of energy that is unwholesome. But this is the wholesome. You arouse the energy, so you got to have the arouse the energy to put forth effort to come here, isn't it? Then you have to apply the mind, you know. Oh yes, this is what I'm going to do. Come here. Then you investigate, you know, how. You have to plan how to come here, isn't it? And that is the four edict. This is the Edipada. This is four roots to a power. So the Buddha said, and the last one, enthusiasm. So we have to have the enthusiasm. Then only we'll be able to continue to keep, you know, to have the perseverance, because it's important, because we have been wandering in the samsara countless lifetime. So that's why sometimes when we read the suttas, they say, the Buddha gave the teaching to this his monk, you know, his disciple, no long time, and they become an arahan and things. Then we say, wow, it's so easy. So maybe for the Buddhas, no long time might be 20 years, 30 years, and no long time. So because if you compare to the time that, you know, the countless lifetime that we in the samsara, actually 20, 30 years is no long time. So there's you need to have the enthusiasm, you know, to keep going. So sometimes you get, you know, sometimes you think that we're getting nowhere, you know, have no progress, and then be put off, you know, then not to continue to practice, because it's a lifetime practice. You keep practicing, so we need to have the enthusiasm, you know, to keep practicing. Then this is the fifth. So a bhikkhu who thus possesses the 15 factors, including enthusiasm, is capable of breaking out, capable of enlightenment, capable of attaining the supreme security from bondage. Suppose there were a hen with 8, 10, 12 eggs, which she has covered, incubated, and nurtured properly, even though she did not wish, that my chicks might pierce their shells with the points of their claws and picks and hatch out safely. Yet the chicks are capable of piercing the shells with the points of the claws and the picks and hatching out safely. So too, a bhikkhu who thus possesses 15 factors, including enthusiasm, is capable of breaking off, capable of enlightenment, capable of attaining supreme security from bondage. That is like, it's just like the Buddhas give the similar of like the hand sitting on the eggs. It's just like the practice. If you sit long enough, whether you want it or not, whether you want to get enlightened or not, it's going to happen. You don't have to wish that may I get enlightened. No. If you follow the teaching of the Buddha, you follow the instruction, you put forth into practice, that is the result of that. So the Buddha's teaching of non-self, we can't make it happen. It's happened by itself. So the hands don't have to wish that may my eggs hatch, you know. It was hatched by itself, whether you want it or not. So whether you want to get enlightened or not, you will get enlightened. So if you are following the path, and if you are on the path, it's just a matter of time. You just keep practicing. That is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So this is the end of these suttas. End of these suttas. End of these suttas. End of these suttas. End of these.